My name's Mike McPherson. I'm with the Kansas Registry. And today we're going to talk a little bit about lessons learned. This is sort of an ad hoc experience, just sort of our experiences, not a whole lot of pretty graphs and things like that. My objectives today, give you a little bit of background, status of the project, talk about our current architecture, and then go into some lessons learned, and for each lesson learned, we'll talk about some of the ways that we addressed these situations, and finally, talk about some recommendations. What you won't see from this today is, I have a background in engineering, so there's not going to be much public health to this talk. A little history then on the registry. For Kansas. We started in the summer of 2005. At that time, we imported approximately 414,000 patient records from our vital records department. That spanned an 11-year range. Then we moved off to the bringing on local health departments. There were 42 local health departments, all direct entry. We hadn't touched HL7 yet. All the data then was extracted and then imported into the registry. At present, we're doing 113 patients nightly for vital records. That's about 98% of the birth cohort for Kansas. Here is a map of Kansas, yes, at the county level. And what's depicted here, it's showing the status for our providers. Those in gray, we have 210 total providers. 127, which are not depicted on here, are private providers. Then at the county health department, we have those counties in the blue or red are the two HL7 or EMR vendors, or EMR-ish vendors. I'll explain that later. The ones in solid are live on the registry. The ones in the hash is background, those have yet to come onto the registry. What's not depicted on the map also is where that a majority of the population is in the eastern third of the state, and that was our strategy to focus on bringing those more populated counties on first and then move our way westward. After hearing some of the other presentations from other state registries, I think we're feeling kind of lucky that we only have two EMRs to deal with. We'll get bit here sooner or later. The data sources then for the registry, and I split this up into created and updated segments. We can see here that 37% of our patients in the registry come from our vital records. And HL7, 27%. MMIS is the Medicaid Management Information System. Direct entry is responsible for 7%. Then if you move off to your right for the updated, that's where these patients then are assumed by either an HL7 provider or direct entry. And you can see how direct entry grows from 7% to 28%. Vital records shrinks by 17%. There's still those that are in the vital records segment of the pie in the flat file, those are essentially unclaimed patients. And where some from that flat file, they just, when they're older, they're not in that age group where they're actively receiving immunizations. Vital records, maybe they've moved and gone elsewhere. For the vaccine data sources, same thing. For vital records, we get that first dose of Hep B. And HL7 is responsible for the biggest slice of pie there. And then if you move off to the right there again, you can see where vital shrinks down. Those vaccines are being assumed by other providers, then, be it HL7 or direct entry. Now, talk a little bit about our architecture. And we do have an HL7 interface. We do one-way and two-way. We do the batch with Medicaid. We have that set up. That's currently our only one-way. Everything else is two-way. Bidirectional real-time IIS. We focus on two-way. And that then allows the provider to enter their data just once. They're not doing this dual entry or having to sign on to multiple systems. We secure our HL7 traffic with SOAP or POST methods. We audit all our HL7 traffic. And we also have a direct entry side of the house where it's protected via secure socket layer, SSL, and there's also a vaccine inventory module. The IIS in general then, we have in addition to the production registry, we have a training registry, which is very important for direct entry training, electronic health record vendor training, testing, and then going through, when we bring on HL7 providers, we send them through phases, pre-certification, certification phases before they go live. And also we have a redundant environment for our IIS, as I'm sure most people do. Right? Yeah. The phases, briefly, I'll talk a little bit more detail about these different phases in the upcoming slides. Thank you. The first phase is an extract phase where the provider extracts all their data and we run reports on them. Looking for making sure that fields are in the right place. Then after they've done that cleanup, they graduate to the certification phase where they send all of their data to our training registry. And our training registry is a snapshot of our production registry. So we can do a real comparison of looking for duplicate patients and duplicate vaccines. After they've cleaned that up and we're content with the data back, we review it back in our team, they then can go to production where they send their data one more time. And now into a little bit more detail about the extract phase, that pre-certification phase. Atypical data, bad city zip code combinations are an example, or the fact that the county or the race is not being reported. We're looking for bad social security numbers. They've got letters versus digits. There's some extras here that you can look for that you shouldn't see all nines or all zeros. We had one EMR system that you had to fill in a social security number. Even if you didn't know it, they would fill it in and send it to us, and we're having to clean that up to this day. Looking for last name, first name, and making sure that the prefixes and suffixes, gender, or generation are in the right place. We require date of birth, and if they didn't fill it in, if they didn't know it, they would fill in with this generic 01-01-1900. And there's, you know, always ongoing issues with data entry and mistyping codes and things like that. Now into the certification phase, all the data is sent to our training registry, as I mentioned before. And this is where we do the comparison then with the existing registry data. We do a quarterly snapshot of our production registry and throw it off into our training registry. And that way, it really weeds out. We have a report that's generated, and we hand that back to the provider that they then, a lot of duplicates, are responsible for. And so they fix those up. We also have duplicates between county health departments, and we ask them to address that at that time, too. In the midst of sending all this information, we're also looking for HL7 acknowledgement errors. Those, we send back a text field that has the error included in it, and these are soft errors. They're not outright AR reject messages. These are missing state or missing county, those sorts of error messages. We share the information with the provider via an ADD report, affectionately called ADD, and that's just, it breaks out acknowledgement, duplicate patient, duplicate vaccine report. And we find that, and this is sort of our first lesson learned, that assuring data quality up front saves time and effort and helps the provider conform to a standard. You expose their data entry issues and they can take attack one of two ways. They're either proud that their data is clean, they're embarrassed that their data is dirty, and it's rare in Kansas that they just don't care. The production process then. So they've gone through the pre-certification, certification phases, and the crew at the Kansas Registry have approved their data, and we then have them send to our production registry. Because of our environment of decentralized environment where the data exists in the local health department as well as in the registry, there's this continuous effort to synchronize data. And we will have these periodic ADD reports then to refer to. We have provider profiles that we're just developing and planning to, at a monthly basis, look at these reports so then we can ask and or delve in deeper about looking for duplicate vaccines or patients or errors. We have tools to deal with duplicates. These are a decision matrix. If you attended Nicole Lambrick's talk yesterday, she went into detail about the development and the use of this of these matrices that we use to help us decide with duplicate patients and duplicate vaccines. And then when you're in this production phase, we provide ongoing support for any duplicates found by the provider. They'll give us a call, we'll deal with that and help that synchronization effort. We'll also help with any new HL7 features. We're continually asking our EMR vendors to provide us with more information. And as they provide us with that information, bugs do occur. And just data verification, the auditing of HL7 helps us verify tremendously. Well, we'll get a call from a vendor. I queried the patient, and we can refer to those logs and go, no, you didn't. And maybe that will expose that there's a problem then on for internet connectivity or some sort of other error on the provider side. So into the first lesson learned is overall data quality, and I've been sort of talking about that in the past slides here. So when the registry first started, we brought those patients in via the flat file imports. And as soon as we were bringing on HL7, we started seeing a number of duplicates and both vaccines and patients. Other data quality issues were regarding accuracy, timeliness and completeness, and how error prone they were, these HL7 providers. And part of our provider profile, we also look at accuracy, timeliness, and this completeness. And this is just making sure that they're sending us as correct data as they can be. So our solution, our way of looking at this data quality is to enforce those pre-certification and certification phases and then address those duplicates at that time. And then we have these ongoing ADD reports where we're looking at errors in duplicate vaccines and duplicate patients and having the provider fix those. We haven't instigated any sort of we will allow you a certain level of duplication before we threaten to turn you off or, you know, some sort of violence or something like that. No, we wouldn't do that. Regarding the tools from the previous side, we have matrices, and these are manually weighted system, and I'll briefly show you that. And then we also have automated scripts to remove Medicaid and these vital duplicates. What happens with vital record, if the hospital doesn't fill in when that first dose of Hep B was given, it will just default to the date of birth. And after, if that patient then is assumed by another clinic and they know the actual date of that first dose of Hep B, we'll remove that vital record and keep the one that came from the provider. Another lesson, continuing with data quality, regular review of data quality at system provider level. We will, those with the ADD reports, and we also do, we have deduplication days where all the registry team sits down and we eat junk food and look at duplicates all day. It's really a weight gainer, but it's fun. No duplicates today, please. So, and also those aforementioned provider profile reports where we're looking at accuracy and on those characteristics of the record. And these are some quick and dirty business rules that I came up with. With the provider profile, we have HL7 traffic captured for a provider. And so I thought these up and thought I would include them here and maybe for further discussion. The very bottom one, I noticed that I'm probably off by a factor of 100 or it should be at 5%. That would indicate a duplicate issue. But so what we're looking here is the number of queries, your VXQs, should not be greater than your requests, your responses back, your VXRs, plus your VXXs, your duplicates being returned, or your QCKs where it didn't find a record. And then for your updates, for a normal situation, when we have those batch or legacy uploads, when a provider is going to production, they will push all their data at once. And so they're not doing any querying, but they're sending them all these updates. So in that scenario, you will have more VXUs than VXQs, but that is rare. The normal scenario is where you're going to have a query and an update, and it should be less than or equal. And then you don't want to have be error prone, so your VXU, you should never have more ACK errors than your updates. If you do, then you've got problems there with your provider. Next, this is the aforementioned matrix or manually weighted for deciding on. Wow, that looks big up here and ugly. This helps us decide how to deal with duplicate vaccines. And it's color-coded, tells us where we need more information. Everything in green is an action item that we can do back at the registry. Those in yellow is an action item that needs to happen at the HL7 provider. Pink and blue, I guess, are both more information required. So now into the EMR system functionality. As we only have two EMRs really to deal with. We're branching out, finally dealing with more vendors, and our sample size is small. And we've noticed then that there are two ways that these EMRs send us an update. There's a manual method where they have to remember to push. I'll hurry. Well, they have to push a button, and then there's an automated, whereas there's a queue where it adds complexity. They don't always display errors. They should be displaying errors, and they don't always send us the data that we would like to see. And then there's utilization of the data that returned. The OBX segment is pretty much being ignored for the moment. So our observation, the way that we've tackled this back in Kansas is for the queuing method, that automated method, it's once it's in the queue, you can't modify that update that's being sent to you. So at times you may be getting a VXU that has an error in it. For the manual, if you forget to push that button, it's not being sent to us. So a backup to send the unsent would be nice. For both, it's good to display the last updated. It gives the administrator that sense that it is in the registry. Error display should always display errors. You should display the hard AR errors immediately and should log all errors. You don't want to interfere with the workflow, but you need to have that ability to tie the VXU with the ACK error. At present, because the ACK error doesn't include the name, you need to have unique identifiers. Utilize the OBX. You get that contraindications and those allergies and risks that are inside the OBX. What we had to do from the IIS side of the house then in order to deal with some of these the EMR shortcomings, the patient matching criteria, we had to deal with that, looking at duplicate vaccines and detecting these possible duplicates. Dealing with the default dose of Hep B with those automated scripts, the way that EHRs, EMRs handle duplicates may differ, and missing core data. So what we've done then is we've tweaked the matching algorithm to reduce the number of duplicates, and I think we have a fairly solid matching algorithm for HL7. We have created filters to look for a 10-day window for duplicate vaccines, And we have a, for the Hep B, we will remove that default that comes from Vital Records. And then we have identified core data set, and we've made that available to our anybody that wants to download that and look at that in our implementation guide. And so, in conclusion, I'll add just a quick conclusion back here that the sending those vendors through those pre-certification certifications helps a lot. And finally, the recommendations that to develop data quality policies and procedures, need to update these continually as new data sources are added, and we need to develop a core set of data for long-term data use. And we want to push and hope that HL7 bidirectional real-time exchange becomes a realism, and we'd like to see that a part of CCHIT criteria and utilize this ERA funding that's going to come trickling down, hopefully to all states for their immunization registries. And there's my contact information. Thank you very much.